Social media and news, finding a balance between being fast and being right. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Amy Scott, in for Molly Wood. After this week's mass shooting in Las Vegas, both Google and Facebook promoted false news stories about the massacre. Google, for example, featured an item from the anonymous messaging board 4chan that identified the wrong person as the shooter. Facebook also promoted inaccurate stories from a suspected Russian propaganda outlet in its trending topics section. Both platforms took down the stories, but it made us wonder, how do Facebook and Google vet news sources, and how should they? Claire Wardle is director of the nonprofit First Draft News, which provides guidance to social media sites on how to find and verify content. Claire, what do we know about how stories are promoted on these platforms? Is it all by algorithm, or are actual humans vetting the stories?
Well, many of us probably remember that there was a bit of a hoo-ha last year when Facebook did actually have humans looking at their trending topics. Somebody who had worked there was making the case that perhaps those staff weren't as impartial as they should be. There was an investigation. Mark Zuckerberg looked at it and said, it's safer just to do this algorithmically. And the same with Google. And if we think about scale, I mean, we're obviously, you know, sitting here in the US, but if we think about all the countries in the world, all the different languages, how you make these kind of editorial decisions, they would have to hire a large number of staff to do this. So from a scale perspective, algorithms make sense. But as we've seen in particular this week, and we've seen it a number of times around big news events, humans are the people who need to make these kind of nuanced decisions around news. Algorithms can take us so far, but on these kind of sensitive subjects that happen quickly, we need human brains to make these sorts of decisions.
So how are you advising Facebook and Google and other platforms to combine that robot with human approach?
What we've seen is the platforms for the last few years have talked about themselves as self-cleaning ovens. Yes, you know, everything's not going to be right at the beginning, but over time, the crowd will help change the course of the information so we get back on track. The problem is, if we have 2 to 3 or even 4 hours of misinformation circulating now, we have real problems. And I think the other thing we have to recognize is there are people trying to game these algorithms. So they're trying to use things like Google bomb the algorithms by repeating the same word so many times that that will shift it up the ranking order. So we also have to recognize now that there are kind of forces who are thinking about these algorithms and trying to reverse engineer them to ensure that the information they want to circulate, often disinformation, is what we see at the top.
So how do algorithms learn? Is it just a matter of trial and error? Do they have to make a lot of mistakes before they figure out how to better identify real news?
Algorithms are based on learning over time and recognizing patterns. So certain news events, for example, hurricanes, we now know every time there's a hurricane, somebody will tweet an image of a shark swimming up an interstate. We should know that, and we should be very aware that these sharks are false. But then on lots of news events, we haven't had a precedent. So that's why news is difficult. This is why newsrooms have to employ many journalists to do these jobs. Within these platforms, I don't think there's a recognition of how difficult news is.
I wonder if we need sort of a reset about what we think of as news. For example, the 4chan channel that identified the wrong person as the shooter in Las Vegas rose to the top of Google's top stories in its general search results. And that word story implies news. Do you think that in some ways it might be better to go back to the days when there were a few respected, well-established news sources appearing on these sites?
It's insane to think that 4chan would have been labeled as a news source. And I do think that labeling is an issue here. How that top carousel box is listed is an issue. And I certainly don't want 4chan to be in that top carousel. And I think actually Google News, the actual news website, does have kind of a whitelisted list of sites that are deemed as news content or not. I think the difficulty with this top carousel that happened the other day when people were searching for that man's name, which was the incorrect name, is it was pulling in from any source of information. There was so little out there. 4chan, because people on 4chan were trying to push this false information, that's how the mistake got made. But I do think if we're going to start talking about blacklisting and whitelisting, yes, on one sense, we can say, well, yes, of course, just NPR and BBC and New York Times. But there are incredibly informed bloggers who write really rich and important content on their sites. Does that mean that that shouldn't be surfaced on Google? So I think deciding when we say Google, do we mean all the links, or do we mean that top carousel, or do we need Google News? And I think there should be a wider discussion about what we mean by those different elements of Google, or the same different elements on Facebook, and to have a wider conversation in society about what we mean by these. Nobody wants to suppress information, but these are not easy problems to solve.
We, the readers of news, also bear some responsibility. I mean, what role do you think just basic media literacy has in this equation? What should we all be on the lookout when we're evaluating a piece of news?
So unfortunately, we're now in a situation where our information streams are increasingly polluted. And so we need to, at all times, be skeptical of the information we're receiving, and particularly be skeptical of our own emotional responses. So if something makes us feel smug or angry or upset, we should be even more critical of what we're seeing, because actually the reverse happens and our brains don't kind of kick in. So we should be, you know, looking at and checking, doing Google reverse image searches. If we see images from hurricanes, we should be researching the information we see. But I do worry a little bit about putting all of the onus onto the users. I do think the platforms themselves need to be doing more to think through these challenges. And I think if something comes up and says top story, because I've heard somebody sends me an email saying, oh my God, have you heard the name of the shooter was X? You put that into Google and it comes up as a top story. I'm going to trust Google, because we would suspect that they had done that kind of editorial filtering. So yes, we as consumers need to be more savvy, but at the same time, I would really like to see the platforms be thinking much more critically about the information they're surfacing around big breaking news events, where information we know is going to be problematic, particularly at the very beginning. And those moments, I think that's when we kick in those editorial teams to say, we need extra pairs of eyes looking at this.
And we've seen how hard it is to unring that bell once it's been rung. When someone shares fake news, they're rarely going to share the correction.
Well, yeah, we absolutely know that it doesn't matter how many times you say that's false, it doesn't travel anywhere near as fast or as wide as the original piece of false content.
That's Claire Wardle, director of First Draft News, which is part of the Shorenstein Center on Media, Politics, and Public Policy at Harvard. If you want to test your own news literacy, there's a game for that. It's called Factitious, created by the American University Game Lab to help users sort real news from fake. It can be hard to tell sometimes. I suspected a story about humans now having a shorter attention span than goldfish was fake until I saw the source, British paper The Telegraph. I'm Amy Scott, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.